Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg. All sports.
Sidney Crosby, the golden goal!
All the time. The following is a special Sports Radio 1290 presentation. Insight, analysis, and opinions on all things hockey. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're 90 minutes through the show, 90 minutes still to go, and the last 90 is going to be filled with interviews. We're thrilled to welcome back to the program our good friend from BehindTheNetHockey.com, Gabe Desjardins. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Our pleasure, Gabe. You're going to be, for our listeners, Gabe is going to be joining us on every second Saturday, the second Saturday of every month.
There you go.
And he's going to be helping us out with our Statistically Speaking segment, as Gabe is one of the statistical experts in the hockey world, currently really anywhere in the game. So you can check out Gabe's work at BehindTheNetHockey.com and at BehindTheNet.ca. I get that right, Gabe?
You did. Thanks for the wonderful intro.
And Gabe, when Drew says that you're going to be joining us every second Saturday of the month,
yes.
He means on the radio, not at his house in Winnipeg. That's what he means by that.
I know. It's a long flight, too.
Yeah, Gabe, you're a former Winnipegger, though, but you're in San Francisco now. Is that right?
Exactly.
There you go. Okay. Got to give the Winnipeg love out there. Gabe, let's get started with recently on your site, you did a post regarding end of season momentum and how it relates to playoff success. Can you explain to our listeners the correlation you found between those two factors?
Sure. So the way I looked at this is I essentially looked at how a team does in the first round of the playoffs. Looked at the percentage of total goals that they score. So goals for divided by goals for plus goals against. Mm-hmm. And I started looking back, starting with one game to go in the season, all the way back to the entire season. And I looked at how well that same goal percentage over the course of however many games in the regular season predicted performance in the first round of the playoffs. So what I was after was, is there some kind of late season momentum? Do you want to spend a lot of time worrying about how a team did in its last 5 games or 10 games or 20 even leading into the playoffs? Because this is something that we hear a lot, right? That a team going into the playoffs with good momentum is going to do well. A team going in with poor momentum is going to do poorly.
Sure. Now, this really relates more to the teams that are already established in their playoff spot, before those last 10 games are in, the ones who are, clearly in the playoffs as opposed to the ones, obviously, battling just to make it in there.
Yeah, exactly. But fundamentally, when we look back however many games, if you look at the actual playoff teams, mm-hmm. you need to go back about 35 games to get a reasonable prediction or to get the best possible prediction of how they're going to do in the first round of the playoffs. You could go back for the entire season, but you can also go back for 35 games. Anything between 35 and 82 games has about the same predictive value in terms of first-round performance.
Yeah, because that's a good idea. You'll be watching TSN, for example, and they'll say, this team's headed hot going into the playoffs, and you have a perspective now of what that actually means.
Yeah.
Gabe, on your site BehindTheNetHockey.com, you recently wrote that you thought that the Florida Panthers sold Michael Frolik at a low value. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So one of the things about Frolik is that he's been a reasonably good scorer throughout his career. Mm-hmm. And if you watch, if you take a short-term or long-term average of his shooting percentage, it bounces all over the place. He's no different than Phil Kessel or Henrik Lundqvist or really any other player out there. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he's going to have highs and sometimes he's going to have lows. And unfortunately or fortunately for Frolik, he had his biggest high when he was a rookie. And since then, he's shot roughly at what's come to be his career average. And then in the very short term, last 75 shots or so, somehow he's managed to not score, which happens all the time and isn't necessarily a significant predictor of future performance. It happens to players all the time. But Frolik went over 75 leading up to the month of February. And so Dale Talon went out and acquired one of his own players, a guy that he knew well.
Right. Yeah.
And he sold for a leak at the lowest possible point. And I think he paid a premium for a guy that he likes.
I agree.
It seems to be that seems to certainly be the case. You know, Frolik, you know, we were talking about it earlier. Just to,
not expensive.
Not expensive. A lot of talent. And
younger than Skilly.
Yeah, younger. So I mean, it does, you know, totally make sense. Especially, and you would think a general manager would really know. You know, you got a guy, he's a goal scorer, but you know, all goal scorers are streaky, and it just seems like they tend to give up so quickly.
Now, very true.
Now, another trade that happened earlier in this year, and it was recently written, our friends at ESPN recently wrote that the acquisition of Dustin Byfuglien by the Thrashers was a quote-unquote steal for Atlanta. How do your statistics evaluate that deal for both sides?
Well, one of the things about Byfuglien is that his coaches know that he doesn't contribute a whole lot at the defensive end of the ice.
Mm-hmm.
He can break the puck out. But fundamentally, Dustin Byfuglien is an offensive zone player.
Absolutely.
And when you have a guy like that, hey, it's smart to focus on what he can do as opposed to what he can't do. So what Dustin Byfuglien's coaches, particularly Kendall in the playoffs last year, but even Atlanta this year with Lindsay, he has had about the softest ice time you can possibly imagine. I think in the playoffs last year, 4 out of every 5 draws that he was on the ice for were in the offensive zone, which is a ratio that you basically never see during the regular season. You never see a player with his ice time stacked so heavily in favor of offensive opportunities. Mm-hmm. And what happened is he succeeded, but he looked great doing it. And I think that Chicago was able to package Byfuglien off for a lot more than he was worth. And Atlanta, has given Byfuglien the same kinds or similar kinds of offensive opportunities as a defenseman. And he has the counting numbers for it. But here's a guy who's averaged 5 seconds of penalty kill time a game this year. So he's got one pure role, and that's offensive zone.
I mean, 5 seconds of penalty kill time for a defenseman is mind-boggling.
Yep. Especially a team with Enstrom being
out. Yeah, especially with the number one sort of all-around defenseman being injured.
Bogosian was injured for a period of time, too, and you could argue with him and Enstrom being the top two guys there. I mean,
yeah.
Either way, regardless, both those guys have missed time. He still hasn't seen any time on the PK. It says something.
Yeah, it says something about how much of a defensive liability he is.
Yeah, and Freddie Meyer's been injured too. So you would say we're going to play an AHL defenseman on the penalty kill rather than your Byfuglien penalty kill.
Exactly right.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way to answer that we can know this. We wonder, teams just given up on trying to convert him into being a responsible defenseman?
Well, clearly not. I mean, they're giving them time defensively, but they're putting him in positions where they don't trust. I don't know. That's a good question, Drew.
Yeah, it's interesting if they've just said, okay, you're such a liability, we'll just keep you, Anyways, that's a story for another day and time.
It's also a matter of winning now or winning later and trying to develop.
Of course. We're joined on the line by Gabe Desjardins of BehindTheNetHockey.com. He's joining us for our usual Statistically Speaking segment.
Gabe, the trade deadline's coming up, and we had some discourse over the past few days, and took an interesting look at the value of adding a player, at the trade deadline and in terms of how much he's worth to the team acquiring him and how much what they're giving up is worth. Can you kind of get into that and kind of maybe step by step into how that works?
Sure. So if you look at players purely based on how many wins you think they're worth, trade deadline deals almost never make sense.
Mm-hmm.
The value of a win is it's not huge during the regular season. It's about $2.4 million. I guess that is huge. $2.8 million, somewhere in that range. But when you look at the salaries that go out with players, the performance that teams get out of them, and then the picks that they give back, it looks like deadline deals are an incredibly negative thing to get involved in for the buying team. But what that misses is the significance of adding a player for the playoffs and how much that's going to affect your playoff outcomes and your odds of reaching second, third, and Stanley Cup final rounds. So what I calculated, we've seen some analysis of NHL playoff game finances. Essentially, a team is looking at $2 million in additional revenue per game played in the playoffs. So if you add a player who's worth 3 wins, he's going to change your, if you're, say, Nashville, if you're a number 5 seed, if you're about a 550 team, adding a 3-win player is going to push you up to to 585 or something like that. And I'm going to spare you the horrific details of the numbers, but suffice to say,
when you say 550 or 585, you mean winning percentage?
Yeah, winning percentage. Okay. Like a team that has that odd of winning against a 500 team. So it ends up, a three-win player ends up getting you about $4.5 million in additional playoff revenue. A two-win player is about $2.5 million, and a one-win player is about $1 million. So there's this extra chunk of money that you can be expecting to get by having this player play for you in the playoffs over and above what you expect from him during the regular season. And that's the thing that makes the salary work out, that makes the value of the draft picks going back to the selling team work out. And there's other advantages here, too, where teams that are on the playoff bubble can increase their probability of making the playoffs by adding a player, and on top of that, increase the expected number of wins in the playoffs based on that. So there can be a real double counting for a team that's right on the bubble that needs a small boost to get into the playoffs.
And you also talk about in terms of, you know, lots of times in trades like this, you know, for a rental defenseman, like, for example, Chris Phillips, we talked about, the draft pick value given up for that actually there's a dollar amount given to those as well.
Sure. So any team that's going to make the playoffs obviously is going to be in the bottom half of the first round with its picks. And the maximum value of those picks is about, you know, $3 or $4 million, the 16th pick. And that scales its way all the way down to a little under $2 million, $1.5 million at the 30th pick. So again, that's something when teams are looking at what they're trading, they have to have a sense of what that draft pick is going to be worth. Now, of course, that draft pick is worth that value over 3, 5, 6 years, whereas Stanley Cup is worth an infinite amount of money to you in the short term.
Also true. I guess everybody who's making those moves thinks that they have that chance at the Stanley Cup, and they're willing to, I guess, incur some of that risk. But the way you spell everything out, it gives you a better idea of what the value is of what people are giving, what teams are giving up, and what they're getting, and the risk involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when if you acquire a Chris Phillips and it's worth an extra couple home playoff games for you, you know, if you're a bottom revenue team, it really does make a world of difference in going forward and just for your bottom line.
And it kind of indicates to you, who's making calls as well. Is it ownership? Is it the GM? Whose plan is in force?
Right. You know, if you're Nashville and you can get an extra round of home playoff games by making a deal, you definitely have to go ahead and do it, because you're tooth and nail to make any revenue, during the regular season, and then the playoffs are just really bonus money for everybody. Gabe Desjardins. BehindTheNetHockey.com and BehindTheNet.ca. Thanks very much for joining us on the Legal Curve Hockey Show this week.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Oh, no problem. Gabe. Take care, Gabe. Thanks very much.
Thank you, guys. Later.
Take care. When we come back after the commercial break.
Great. No, that some great insight there, and people have to realize, check out both of those sites. BehindTheNetHockey.com is with the blog, and he spells everything out for you. The BehindTheNet.ca is a little more of the raw stats. Once you read BehindTheNetHockey.com, you can kind of get an idea of what the BehindTheNet.ca provides. But just some great analysis into what goes into all these moves. And I don't think necessarily that every general manager and owner take all those things into consideration.
It depends if you're old school or new school, I think.
And even new school is cutting edge there.
Yeah, it's definitely it takes a little while to wrap your brain around it, but it's well worth reading about it.
Always.
When we come back after the break, George Johnson of the Calgary Herald. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Legal Curve Hockey Show, 10:45 in the morning. With that music that you're playing there, Rack, Richard's going to think he's at a live where he'll inevitably be later on tonight. Am I right, Richie?
No, Drew.
No?
That's so last week.
That was so last week. Sorry.
Drew actually recorded this in my basement last week.
Let's see what happened.
a little frog.
Wait for you to cough up a whole steak like Chris Farley.
I need a cigar.
Welcome back to the program. We just heard from Gabe Desjardins in the previous segment. Now we're pleased to be joined on the line from the Calgary Herald, good friend of the program, George Johnson. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing very well, George. Thanks very much. George, let's start with sort of a conflicting report that came out earlier in the week. At first, it was that Alex Tanguay was out indefinitely with a concussion, and then it became he's out indefinitely with a neck strain. Can you give us some further news as to Alex Tanguay's status?
Well, the first that had everybody rushing for the smelling salts was that they actually told us anything in the first place. it wasn't upper body, lower body, middle body. and the navel up, the navel down.
You know, out of body.
The idea that they actually tell us something was new and refreshing and just kind of left everyone speechless. I went from a concussion to a neck strain, and I would think it would have to be a neck strain because yesterday at the morning skate, Alex did skate. He skated fairly hard. He was laughing and joking. He didn't look like a guy who was going to be walking into walls, you know, or counting his fingers every 5 to 10 minutes. From what we can sort of gather off of what we saw yesterday at the morning skate, it should be an X strain, and he should be back pretty soon.
That's pretty important, obviously, considering the way the Flames have been playing. I mean, you know, 13-4-3 in their last 20. They haven't lost in regulation in their last 10.
Yeah.
George, I mean, there's obviously a bunch of factors that go into it, but how big of a factor was Daryl Sutter's resignation in the way the team's been playing?
Well, it certainly has coincided kind of nicely with everything. And I've certainly been one of Daryl's biggest critics here over the last 3 or 4 years, but I think it's probably a little too simplistic to peg it all on that. You know, I was having an argument with somebody in the organization yesterday about that, and they were saying, well, the ticket taker's happier, the coach is happier, I'm happier, the third-line left winger's happier, the guy in the office is happier, and that makes all the difference. Yeah, it makes a difference. We all want to be happy at our work. I get that. And it wasn't a part of, you know, almost funereal kind of a, you know, environment that they were trying to work in there. But, you know, I would say it played a part. I just think that they had a little bit of success. Kiprusoff started to come back a little bit, which is obviously tantamount to them being successful or not being successful. And they started to realize that what Brent was preaching to them could actually work. And so that combined with the fact that, you know, they don't have Daryl wandering down on the bench, you know, in pregame, at morning skates, glaring at them like, you know, they just, you know, kidnapped the Lindbergh baby. You know, I think that makes a lot of difference, but I think it's too simplistic to say that that's all of it.
Let's talk about Jay Bouwmeester for a little bit. He took a lot of criticism last year and early this season when the Flames were struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that, you know, Bouwmeester is one of the least talked about players on the Flames, how that relates to, you know, them turning their season around?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's not that Jay Bouwmeester was ever a bad defenseman, although he really struggled in the second half of last year. It's just that people look at that price tag, and, you know, they kind of have to swallow hard. You know, $6.6 million against the cap, you know, is a lot of money for a guy that, you know, was a minus player last year on a team that was 7 games over .500 or 8 games over .500 at the end of the year. You know, he logs a lot of minutes. He hasn't had the same type of, you know, offensive impact that he did in Florida, but a lot of that is because, you know, he doesn't have to. You know, and there was a lot of talk that maybe he was just a really good bad team defenseman. You know, in Florida, it's kind of like, okay, Jay, go do whatever you want, whatever you do want is fine, because the rest of it is, you know, fairly scattered and erratic. But he's been a lot better this year. He's just not a very talkative guy. I mean, you can't go over to him and you know, do a major Jay Bouwmeester piece just because he's just not up to it, right?
Yeah.
You can go talk to Giordano, you can talk Sarich's ear off, you can, and that's a lot of it. A lot of it is what your projection is with the media, and we've kind of come to the realization that Jay is not that comfortable having us over there, so we don't go, you know.
We're joined on the line by George Johnson of the Calgary Herald talking about the Flames.
George, you know, once this team's finally now in playoff spot and in playoff contention, obviously, you know, the team gets scrutinized a little bit more closely and people are looking at, you know, the roster. Rene Bourque is an interesting one to me. I mean, a guy who was kind of coming into his own, signed a new contract extension, started up pretty well once coming back from the concussion. But, I mean, he has 7 less points than Olli Jokinen. What's been his overall issue?
Well, I think the issue is the same issue that, you know, caused Chicago to decide they didn't need his services to begin with. It's just that he is a streaky player. He's a really streaky player. I mean, you look at him, he's kind of a bigger, better version of Curtis Glenn Cross, only he doesn't play like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's a big guy.
Absolutely.
I mean, he should be a power forward, and he should be scoring 5 goals a year. But when he wants to, like that one week he was player of the week, he had 6 goals in 3 games. And it wasn't just that. It's not just the points. It's the presence. And so often he just drifts out of games. He drifts out of weeks, for crying out loud. And you're just kind of wondering where he is and is he dressed and, you know, what in heaven's name is going on. And that's just been kind of his M.O. And you know, like Glenn Cross in a lot of ways, only he's obviously, as I said, you know, got more offensive upside than Curtis does, is a consistency factor. And they haven't figured it out yet. He scored last night, really nice goal, you know, to tie the game, and but they need that more from him on a consistent basis. And how Brent decides to do it, because they're married to each other for another 5 years, you know, and it's $20 million out of the kitty. So they better figure out how to do it, because, you know, I think a lot of the rest of the league is looking and saying, well, do I really want to trade for Ray Bork if it came to that? And, you know, he just doesn't do it every night.
We were talking about Daryl Sutter earlier. Do you see Jay Feaster staying on as the general manager and, you know, having that interim tag removed? And do you think that if Jay Feaster stays on as GM, he'll keep Brent Sutter as the coach next year?
To your second question, there's no question. You know, I think people don't realize, I think, what a good job Brent's done. I mean, this team was 9 points back of a playoff spot a month ago. And that seemed like it might as well be 900. They had like five teams to leapfrog. I mean, this just seemed like it was just impossible, right? And now here they are back in the thick of it. As to Jay, I certainly hope so, and I don't know why in heaven's name you would have hired him, a guy that's won a Stanley Cup, that has a pretty good resume, if he wasn't going to be your guy, if they had to tie the can to Daryl, which of course they did. I would hope that he's going to get a chance. It's a tough job because they've got a lot of guys with long-term deals for a lot of money. You know, he might as well not even go to the draft the way it's set up now. They got one pick in the top 100. It'll be like 5 hours between picks for him. He can go out and have a meal and come back. And the prospects, yeah, they've got a few prospects. But, you know, and that's the thing that's kind of interesting about this team right now is because of this push, does that compromise what Jay Feaster would like to do with this team? Mm-hmm. Because you can't turn around and trade Alex Tange now, or even if he's a UFA July 1st. You can't turn around and trade Robin Regier if that was your plan to get picks to try and stockpile some drafts so you can start building a franchise again. Because people are going to say, well, you're throwing the towel in on the season. In a lot of ways, it would have been easier for them just to go right in the toilet. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And then they could implode it.
And that was our next question, George. You know, are they going to be buyers or sellers? I mean, obviously, we don't really know. Do you see them leaning either way, or do you see them maybe just in the middle and not doing anything?
I see them, you know, I see him trying to get picks somewhere.
Okay.
Now, you know, the guys that you look at that they could get picks for, you know, you could get something for Tange, for sure. He's been really great at $1.7 million, and he's going to want $3 million next year.
Right.
Glenn Cross is a UFA. Had a really good season, and they probably can't afford to pay him next year the way that, you know, because they've got Hagman on the books, and they've got Sarich on the books for another year, and they've got Stajan for three more, for crying out loud. So you know, they've got some wiggle room, but again, it doesn't look like they're going to run away and sit in fourth place, and it doesn't look like they're going to topple way down and, you know, into the subterranean cellar and join the Oilers. So, perception's going to be a lot of the ball game around here. So I can't see them doing much. I can see them doing a lot in the summer.
George, we'll leave you with this final question. The Heritage Classic is next Sunday at McMahon Stadium. Is the buzz growing in Calgary? What are your thoughts on the media attention the event has received so far?
Well, it's been kind of quiet, and I think it's been kind of quiet because we all figured, at, you know, 4 weeks ago that it was going to be basically the end of the season for the team. Right? What are we going to do after the Heritage Classic? Oh, my God. But now they actually have a season. So I think more of the buzz around here is on the fact that they're in it and they're pushing. You know, the rink has been put down. The boards have been put down. There's been a couple of media availabilities out there. It's going to be great to see the 89 team again, or a lot of it, on the Saturday in the alumni game. It's going to be great seeing Alex Coadley come back here as an Abbotsford Heat, for crying out loud. So, you know, that's going to be fun in itself. So, you know, I think it's starting to build a little bit, and it's the Habs, and we're hoping that Camilleri is going to be healthy enough to play because he was such a popular guy here. But I think right now most of the talk is on the fact that these guys have sat sat up in their coffin.
George Johnson of the Calgary Herald, thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
No problem. Entertaining
as usual, George.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Let's go to break. Before we do go to break, Richard, we say goodbye to you for this week. You're off to be, your day job. You've got a conference you have to attend.
I do have a conference I have to attend, but looking forward to next week's show. And as we get closer to the trade deadline, there's only more to talk about. And then after the trade deadline, the playoffs. How quickly has this show gone by so far?
This year has flown by, absolutely blown by.
Remus is going to take my seat.
Remus is going to big shoes to fill for Remus. And coming up after the break, Damian Cristadero of the St. Petersburg Times.
We're going to miss you, Richie, but Michael's coming in.
Yeah.
More than able.
Yeah. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, one final hour here on this Saturday morning, and we're thrilled to be joined on the line now by our good friend from the St. Petersburg Times, Damian Cristadero. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Sure, guys. Good to be here.
Thanks very much for joining us, Damian. Damian, let's start with some of the sort of off-ice announcements that the Lightning have made in the last week or 10 days. They announced a $35 million renovation plan for the St. Petersburg Time Forum. They introduced the new jerseys. Why the change in why have Jeff Vinnick and Todd Lewicki decided to make all these changes right at this point in time?
Well, I think part of it is that they just want to kind of put their brand on the organization, and I think they want to get away from what was a couple years of a really bad time for the team and for the franchise. And I think this is a way to kind of get a fresh start. I think a lot of it is marketing. You get a new jersey out there, you create some new marketing opportunities. Part of that also is like I said, branding the team. Steve Yzerman is a big fan of just, here's an iconic logo that's going to stand the test of time, and I think they tried to do that, especially with their home jerseys. But I think ultimately it's just putting their own stamp on a franchise, and I think beyond that, it's making sure that the community and the hockey community at large understands that the Lightning that they're committed to keeping the Lightning in Tampa, and they're going to try and make it work there. I just wanted to add, I got a call from a TV station in Seattle, which was convinced that the Lightning was going to be moving to Seattle, and because of the connection with Todd Lewicki, who used to be the CEO with Seahawks.
Sure.
And you don't front $35 million into an arena if you're going to move the team.
Yeah, I actually personally thought that those jerseys look good. They look sharp. Out of all of the jerseys that have come out recently, that was great to see. That just means that the team and the ownership is doing well. One of the guys that you recently wrote about on the Lightning was Simon Gagné, who is basically, the headline, I stole this right off the headline, but, the headline was that he's settled in finally in Tampa. And, do you think that his recent offensive success just happens to be, a byproduct of the line mates that he's playing with? He's been playing with Le Cavalier and Teddy Purcell for most of the year. Or do you think, this is more of Gagné personally finding his game in Tampa?
I think it's a lot of things. I think with Simone, I think he's showing that he's just a sensitive individual. I think he likes the line that he's finally on here with, like you said, with Vinny and Teddy Purcell. I think that he finally has broken the ties with Philadelphia. I think, like the article stated, he admitted that it took a lot longer for him to do that than he anticipated. Part of it was that he had some family issues. His wife was pregnant. And they felt very, uneasy not having coming to Tampa and having to find new doctors and feeling comfortable with that. So I think just all of that, plus, Simone got hurt and he had a pretty severe neck injury, or they called it a neck injury, and missed 15 games. I think all of those things just made his transition to Tampa a bit more difficult. I think now that he's feeling good, I think he's in a, they found a good place to live. They feel comfortable with the community, and I think those pressures have lessened, and I think you're seeing that that on the ice.
All right. As a sophomore, how would you rate the play of defenseman Victor Hedman so far this season?
Well, I think in the last 15 or 20 games or so, I think he's been terrific. I don't know what it is, if it was just the amount of games or if he went through a little stretch there. I think it was a 3 or 4 game stretch when he was a -6. But the light bulb went on for Victor Hedman. I mean, he is all of a sudden understanding positioning a lot better. He's understanding when he can take chances into the offensive zone. His defense has become a lot sturdier. And I think he's finally understanding the game that he has to play. And look, it's a tough thing for not only for any defenseman coming into the league, but a defenseman that's never played the North American game before. And I think now that he's played whatever it is, 130 games in the NHL, I think he's finally understanding it. He's got a good coach who's been patient with him. I think, again, a lot of factors enter into it, but I think he's just finally getting it.
One of the shining stars, the young shining stars in the NHL, and to no one's surprise, is Steven Stamkos. He started off the year like a house on fire. There was some talk, 50 goals, 50 games, that sort of thing. And then, they sort of slowed down a bit, and now he's picked it up again. Can you speak to how the Lightning have adjusted to the opponent's adjustments against Stamkos?
Well, they've done a couple of things. They've moved him around on the power play. I mean, you'll find him just about anywhere. You'll find him in front of the net. You'll find him at the top of the slot at the blue line. You'll find him at the point. And you'll find him at his normal spot at the faceoff circle. So I think it's just a matter of trying different things to free up space to get him some openings to shoot. I mean, part of that's on Stamkos, too. I mean, he has to be able to adjust to the pressure and to keep moving and to find some open ice. But I think that the Lightning have done their best to kind of give him the opportunity to do that. And with the addition of Marc-Andre Bergeron, that just gives them somebody else for the opposition to worry about. So it might even, loosen things up for Stamkos a little bit.
After Tampa acquired Dwayne Rolison, they obviously placed Mike Smith on waivers. Has he basically just not been the same player since he suffered a concussion?
Yeah, I think that's had a lot to do with it. I mean, if you remember back to that season, he was, for the first half of that season, 2008, 2009, he was just lights out. I mean, just a terrific top of his game, one of the better goalies in the league for that first few months. He got that concussion, and he really hasn't been the same since. But he's had a couple of injuries since then as well, which I think put back his complete recovery, and then you get it when you start with that, then you start getting into confidence issues and different goaltender coaches with the transition to a new staff, and I think a lot of things, again, I keep coming back to it, a lot of things enter into it, but at the root, I think you're correct that since that concussion, he just hasn't been the same goalie.
All right, Dwayne Rolison's played great this year for the Lightning, posting 4 shutouts and is a .61 against average. Is it safe to say that Dwayne Rolison has been the steal of the year so far this season?
I don't know if you want to call him the steal of the year. I mean, they did give up a Ty Wishart, who apparently is playing well with the Islanders. So, let's just say that Yzerman identified the need. It wasn't too hard to identify, but he identified the need and didn't wait around until the end of the trade deadline to make the move. So I give a lot of credit to Steve Yzerman for doing that. And certainly Dwayne has solidified everything back there. And it's not only goaltending, but it gives the guys in front of him a little confidence that any mistake they make doesn't end up in the net. So good job all around by them doing that. I mean, it's been a great addition so far.
I like how you say apparently playing well for the Islanders. If a player plays well on the Islanders and nobody notices, does it really matter?
Yeah, that's true. But at least good for Ty. He's getting a chance. I mean, he was really buried here in Tampa for whatever reason. Never really got a chance to show what he can do. And at least he gets that chance in New York. Maybe he makes something of it.
We probably got an assist last night. I think they scored 17 goals last night against Pittsburgh.
And if he didn't have a fighting major, then he's definitely on his
own. Exactly.
Yeah, I know, but that was a 1970s brawl there. But anyways, enough about the Islanders. When Steve Yzerman came aboard in Tampa, everybody thought that it was definitely a good sign for the organization. Like you said, they got rid of the stink from the previous. The previous ownership and management group. Has the transformation that the Lightning have undertaken been far quicker than anybody really could have hoped for?
Yeah, I don't think anybody would have expected them to be where they are in the standings at this point. I think if they had been challenging for a playoff spot at this point, they would have been happy given the previous 3 years not being in the playoffs. But Guy Boucher has a terrific system, and he found some players who are willing to buy in and to play the style that he wants. Tampa is not the best team in the East by any stretch of the imagination. The Flyers are a better team. The Penguins are a better team. The Capitals are probably a better team. But they find a way to beat these teams. I think it's fair to say you're probably not a harder working team in the league. And that's due to the coach and due to the leadership on the team, Marty, Vinny, Stamkos even, and buying in and saying, you know, we're going to trust this coach and we're going to play his system and we're going to wring every point we can out of it. And I think that's what you're seeing.
Damian, we'll let you go on this last question. I mean, the February 28th is circled on everybody's calendar, NHL trade deadline. What do you see Steve Yzerman looking to acquire? What area of the team is he looking to address at the NHL trade deadline?
Well, in a perfect world, he'd get a defenseman as a power play quarterback, and he'd get another defenseman, another top six defenseman. So I guess he can join the rest of the league in looking for that.
Yeah.
The thing that might hamper Steve if he really wants to do those things, that he seems to be unwilling to trade draft choices. He has said that he's not going to trade his first, second, or third round draft choices for this year or next year. So that's going to he's going to have to be creative if he wants to land a real impact player. And if he can't do that, maybe he just tinkers around the edges and just adds some depth. You can't have too much depth when the playoffs come. So, but don't expect him to sign anybody who's going to be a high-priced free agent at the end of the season that he can't afford. Don't look for him to trade for anyone who has multiple years on a contract that he's going to get bogged down in. So, really, he's kind of limited in what he can do, but, I mean, as we've seen with Steve, I mean, he can be pretty creative if he wants to be. And so I think it's really up in the air at this point because there's just a lot of, caveats to what he can do. So we'll see.
Damian Christodero of the St. Petersburg Times, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Anytime, guys. Enjoyed it.
Take care, Damian. Thanks very much. When we come back after this commercial break, we're going to go on the beats. We still have Scott Brown of True North Sports and Entertainment to join us. Rapid fire, cheers and beers, all your favorite segments. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Eleven 15, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The music this hour brought to you by Drowning Out. Their latest CD is soon to be available in stores everywhere. Is that right? Sure, sounds about right. So Drowning Out, check them out, and some good local music talent. Thanks to our guests so far today, Gabe Desjardins of BehindTheNetHockey.com, George Johnson of the Calgary Herald, Damian Christodero of St. Petersburg, and still to come, Scott Brown of True North Sports and Entertainment. It's time to go on the beat.
On the beat.
We'll start with On the Beat, and with a couple of articles, and they will be available at www.illegalcurve.com. A couple articles that I find to be very symptomatic and very good evidence about what the Montreal Canadiens players have to deal with in the Montreal media. You have an article, an article written by the QMI agency, which
a wire article.
Article. There's no name attributed to the article. Which it's on the Slam Sports. QMI, of course, is Quebecor.
Is there a reason for that here? I think there might be a reason for that here.
Why? What?
Wire articles are still attributed, but
who knows? It's not attributed to anybody. But QMI is better known as Quebecor. They're the only
soon to be owners of the Quebec Nordiques.
Yeah, sure. They own the Winnipeg Sun here in the local market. Anyways, it's an article that says it starts off with brash Montreal Canadiens rookie defenseman PK Subban might be rubbing his older teammates the wrong way. Then it goes on to discuss an alleged incident between PK Subban and Hal Gill. PK had his jersey on the ground, and Hal told him. Hal allegedly said you're a bad word, PK. I don't want to repeat it, of course, on a family-friendly radio station. You see here, controversy in the Montreal dressing room. Trouble, PK Subban, brash rookie, affecting his friendship with his teammates. And then you read the backstory, and this backstory is brought to you by Arpan Basu of CTV Montreal. Really interesting, where Arpan, who was witness to the entire exchange, points out that at no time during this conversation, between this back and forth, between Subban and Hal Gill, were either of them being serious. They were laughing, they were joking around. When Hal Gill called Subban a bad word, he did it with a smile on his face and laughter and mirth in his heart. So you look around and you say, this is just an article with such evidence as to what the players in Montreal have to deal with and how journalism can really be a nasty, nasty business at some times. Ezzy, you have a journalism background. What are your thoughts on these two articles and compare and contrast?
Well, it's funny, Drew. You guys remember, I emailed this article to everybody earlier in the week.
That's
I think
right.
It was
part of our
Wednesday
research.
Or Thursday, right?
That's right.
And just so you guys could read it, because it was quite newsworthy.
You emailed the QMI article.
I emailed you, yes, that's right, Drew. I emailed you guys the QMI article, which was about P.K. Subban and how he basically peed off Hal Gill. And then you sent me back the CTV article the same day, and after I read that, I thought to myself, you know, this was totally a misrepresentation of what was going on in that dressing room. Because if you read this article, you'd think, okay, you know what, maybe P.K. Subban is being a little bit disrespectful, and some of the players on the Montreal Canadiens are actually calling him out on it now in front of other players in the dressing room and the media. But really, in all actuality, what was happening here was Hal Gill was being a little bit sarcastic with P.K. Subban. They were joking around, joshing around a little bit. And member of the media, or maybe two, saw this, and they perceived something else that was going on, or decided that they were going to make their own version of the news. And, I mean, from all accounts, and you know, Arpin, you know, points this out in the article, Hal Gill, who's playing with P.K. Subban, is basically taking him under the wing.
He's mentoring Subban.
He's mentoring him, and they've become friends. So,
that's right.
Really, I mean, yeah, Hal Gill is, you know, maybe playing the role of big brother on the team, but he certainly doesn't have a negative attitude towards P.K. Subban at all.
It's unbelievable that how badly this story was distorted, and really in an attempt to make P.K. Subban look bad. That seems to be the only purpose of this article.
Right, and I think that's the main problem here. That this, what, you know, we don't know who the writer is.
Unfortunately. If it was a legitimate story, you'd know who it was.
Whoever the writer was, obviously, you know, made a big mistake here, because he made P.K. Subban look bad when really a big part of the story was how P.K. Subban was in the dressing room and he left his jersey out. And you can read these articles. We'll link them. But basically, this whole story was it's like two people viewing the same piece of art and each person having a completely different opinion of what that piece of art means.
Except in one sense, you know, fine. I mean, I understand your analogy there. And, you know, because of, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. But
I know you loved art too.
Yes,
Drew.
Of course.
That's why
I'm a huge aficionado of art.
Van Gogh and
whomever
such.
Wrote the story for QMI either wasn't there and relied on third and fourth hand, you know, evidence, or was being intentionally disingenuous when they wrote this story. And to me, that's a real big problem. Remus, your thoughts on this?
I was going to say, you know, you look at the both stories, and there's one thing that comes across, you know, as the same. Is it shows, you know, the respect that the Montreal Canadiens players have, you know, for the logo and for the jersey. You
right.
know, it's
and
like
that's what it was about. Hal Gill was trying to tell P.K. Subban to respect the logo.
Yeah. And it also, you know, it shows, you know, in all jobs, I just started a new job recently, and you always want to look up to the people, you know, who are older, who have more experience.
And learn from them.
And learn from them. It shows that P.K. Subban is, you know, being taken, you know, Hal Gill is taking Subban under his wing, and he is, you know, trying to learn how to become a professional.
I just thought it was really unfair. And, I mean, you know, you hear about unfair journalism, and this is a case of unfair journalism.
It's unfair journalism, and you know what?
And it's unfair journalism by whomever at QMI doesn't publish their name. I want to know who your name is, you know, who published this article, because they didn't, in fact, they didn't, you know, follow any of the basic tenets of journalism, which obviously have to be find the source, research it, what actually happened, because if they had bothered to make one phone call to Arpin Basu of CTV, who was in the dressing room, they would know, okay, there's no story here. This is a good example of actually how Subban is being respectful to his older teammates and learning from them.
And I think what's kind of visible here, too, is that my perception of this is that Arpin Basu is around the team a lot, and this other person who was working for QMI maybe wasn't around the team a lot because
they wouldn't know the dynamic.
If you read the CTV article, you can see that Subban and Gill have this joking relationship, and they've been visible as two guys that have formed a
bond
on the team.
And anybody who's been around the team often would know how they interact with one another.
Right.
Yeah, so really bad journalism, and you know, that upsets me. you know, personally, I'm personally upset right now. Moving to the Vancouver Sun, Ian Walker of the Vancouver Sun providing some insight into the rehabilitation and the long odds that Ray Emery has fought against in order to come back to the NHL. Now, I'm not a doctor, I just play one on the radio, but it sounds like, you know, I think we were, for those of us in the, you know, remember Bo Jackson, what Ray Emery had, his condition, is very similar to what ended, you know, Bo Jackson's career as a multi-sport athlete. So, you know, kudos to Emery for coming back. I mean, and the hard, it goes through all the hard work he has gone through in that last, you know, really year. And the training he's gone through with a fitness guru named Matt Nichol, Pilates, yoga, acupuncture, you know, they realize that the hip itself is never going to get that much better. So what they've done to compensate for that is to strengthen all of the core muscles around to, you know, make up for the weakness that the hip provides. It goes to show you the drive and the heart that Emery had to and the commitment he had to put into getting back into an NHL organization.
Yeah, I welcome all of our listeners to check out this article. It was written before Emery signed with the Ducks. It was written the last day of January. But this is a good article. Not only, it's kind of cool. This article's cool not only because Bo Jackson's in it, but it's kind of neat because you actually
everything
see...
Everything about Bo's cool.
Oh, but you actually see what Ray Emery's been up to. When everyone saw that Ray Emery signed with the Ducks, people were maybe thinking, like, you know, is this guy actually okay? Like, he had a major hip problem. Like, and then you see that he's done all of this training, and, you know, he's gotten a personal trainer and a nutritionist, a yoga instructor, whatever. He's basically pulled out all the stops. But this is a good article because Bo Jackson's basically saying, like, I don't follow hockey. I don't know who Ray Emery is, but I know that this is a huge injury. And this is a testament to maybe how Emery is as an athlete, because 28 years old, that's, I mean, this injury, it could have easily required a higher level of surgery, which he maybe a hip replacement.
Well, it looked like it could have been career-ending if he didn't have the, you know, easily could have ended his career. The technical term is, about a year ago, he was diagnosed with avascular necrosis, which is essentially the flow of blood to the top of the ball in his right hip had been cut off and the bone had deteriorated to its core.
You know, Drew, it's quite remarkable, the medical procedures that are around now. Could you imagine if a procedure like this, you know, was available to Bo Jackson, you know, 20 years ago?
Look at Bobby Orr, all the surgeries he undertook.
Bo Jackson might be playing in the NHL right now.
Football, baseball, Bo knows hockey.
Quick, who is, you guys, I know Michael and, I'm losing my voice here. Excuse me. Need some.
Too many late nights, is it?
Too many Cokes, I don't know. Not enough water. What other multi-sport athlete was in the, not Deion Sanders, played for the Anaheim Angels, played hockey from Canada.
I know exactly. Oh, God. He was, and he played for the Jets also.
He was training camp for
yes.
the Jets.
Yes. Oh, God. This is going, an old-school Jets,
you
know, guy. He was pitcher.
Kirk
McCaskill?
Yes.
Thank you. Kirk McCaskill. He was pitcher for the Angels. Remus, I don't think you were born when Kirk McCaskill was playing.
I was not aware of
yes.
that one.
Kirk McCaskill, and he was a Jets draft pick as well.
Jets draft pick, yeah.
Yeah, and as choking, you know, you're choking out in here. So why don't we head to break, and when we come back, Scott Brown of True North Sports and Entertainment. Hopefully, Ezzy will do something about the frog that's in his throat. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 11:30 in the morning. We just heard previously in the show from Damien Christodero of the St. Petersburg Times, George Johnson of the Calgary Herald, and Gabe Desjardins from BehindTheNetHockey.com. We're pleased to welcome to the program now the Director of Corporate Communications and Hockey Operations for True North Sports and Entertainment, Scott Brown. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. Did we get the title? Did I get the title right?
Yeah, it's a long one, eh?
Yeah, seriously. I had to spend all night practicing just to get that right.
Yeah, well, they sometimes do that just to make you feel important, so.
Very good. Scott, big night tonight at the MTS Center. You know, Mike Keane night, his number 12 jersey will be raised to the rafters. First ever jersey retirement for the Manitoba Moose. Can you give us a little bit of the background? The last few weeks, what have they been like leading up to tonight, and what's the fan reaction been like? You know, a lot of excitement in the city for this.
Yeah, there has been. I mean, you know, we've seen a definite increase in the number of ticket sales as we've gotten closer to this night that we're expecting, you know, well over 10,000 people, hopefully get close to the 11,000 with a strong walk-up. We got some great media coverage from both daily papers and this morning, and as well as the TV news coverage after Mike finally gave an interview yesterday for the first time since the summer. So I think there's a general anticipation definitely building within the organization as well. You talk to a lot of people on the streets and around Winnipeg, and you know, there's been a slow acknowledgement in terms of the importance of what Mike Keane is to the hockey community here in the city, and I think that that'll be a sign tonight. You know, that'll be a good time that everyone will be had, and they'll look forward to it, and I think that everyone coming tonight will enjoy the ceremony and then enjoy the hockey game afterwards against the Rampage.
All right, can you give us a little sneak peek of what the special tribute will entail and any special guests who will be in attendance for the ceremony?
Well, there will be some special guests. Unfortunately, I can't give you a little bit of a little tidbit because so far that's been kept pretty tightly under wraps. There will be, of course, some videos, some tribute videos to the career of Mike. It's a long career, so there's a lot of material to choose from. And the guys have done a superb job in our multimedia department. I've seen the video a couple of times, and they've done a superb job in terms of going to Mike's entire career, not only his NHL and his AHL career, but also his WHL career with the Moose Jaw Warriors, and then growing up here in Winnipeg with the Assiniboine Park Rangers and Sir John Franklin Explorers, pictures and video dating all the way back to then. So the video is very good. There's going to be a couple of surprises for Mike in store tonight, which we're very happy about, and we're going to work very hard to keep under wraps until then.
Scott, obviously Mike retired at the end of last season, but he didn't take a job with the Moose at all or True North. Has there been any talk about Mike Keane joining the Moose and in a management role or anything like that?
Well, I think Mike talked about this yesterday at his media scrum that he did yesterday. He took the advice of a lot of people that he talked to back in the summer, and he made the conscious decision to step away from the game for a year. He wanted to spend some time with his family and watch his kids, Olivia and Jackson, play hockey and spend a little bit more time at home. He calls himself a stay-at-home mom now, and he calls it an exhausting job, actually. So he's gained a bit of appreciation for parents that have regular jobs and then as well have to come home and drive their kids to hockey games. And he says he doesn't even have a regular job and he gets tired driving around to hockey games, but he's enjoying it. He made the decision to step away from the game for a year, and he admits that he's growing an appreciation for it once again. He admitted yesterday he's getting the itch. So in terms of jobs that would come along in management or coaching, no, there's been no discussions that have taken place between anybody. Mike admits that he's had some offers. He's very well connected and very well respected in the hockey community and the number of different areas that he's, cities that he's played in and the number of different connections that he had throughout his 22-year career. So he'll have his opportunities, but he made his decision clear that he was going to take some time on his own to be with his family that have given him so much through, his entire life to play hockey to this point.
All right. Scott, would you be able to give us a quick update on the True North Press Box expansion project?
Well, it's coming along. I mean, it's basically the situation with the press box when the building was constructed back in 2004 is the press box is one of the areas of the building, probably the only area of the building, which is a little substandard in the fact that I've got the ability to seat about 50 to 60 people up there currently, and unfortunately it's built on top of the rafters of MTS Center, if you've ever been here and taken a look.
It's way up there.
Yeah, unfortunately that blocks about 30% of the view for people that are sitting up there. About of the seats that are up there, 30% of them can't see the entire ice surface when they look down on the rink. So, we've known from the beginning for a number of years that we had to put together a capital project in order to get this done and to improve it and to build another level below the rafters. It was on the docket to be done in the very near future. It just happened to be a little bit of a coincidence with all the boxes moving to another level that it kind of came along at the same time. But it's one of the projects that we've been talking about for a long time that kind of its time came up. As you can tell, it's taking a time to get done. It's a major renovation in the arena, and we're hoping it'll be done sometime in the summer.
You know, sounds with all those obstructed seats in the press box, it sounds like the old America West Arena where our beloved Phoenix Coyotes used to play before moving to Glendale. This is Scott. You know, we're a Winnipeg radio station, and I think by law we're obligated to ask you about the recent rumors. Of course, sort of the Coyotes have not fallen to the back burner by any stretch, but you know, they borderline seem to have stabilized a little bit, at least for the moment. But Atlanta is the team, the name we're hearing so much about. You care to comment anything regarding any rumors about Atlanta potentially, you know, making a return to Canada and Winnipeg?
No, you know what, guys, we've decided a long time ago that you know, this the issues that go on with the National Hockey League and attempting to maintain its teams in its current markets, it really doesn't have a lot to do with us at the stage that they're at. They worked very hard, as you could tell with Phoenix. They worked very hard to keep the team in Phoenix. And we would imagine that they would do the same with the Atlanta market. So we decided a while ago that we weren't going to get into any debates or conversations about things that we really can't control or focus on. We've got a hockey operation here that we tend to, you know, devote a lot of our time to, and it gets all of our focus, and that's where we put our hearts and our minds right now, is on the Manitoba Moose, and that's what we're going to continue to do, and to make sure that we put forward the AHL product that we possibly can.
Can you speak to sort of the difficulty that exists? I mean, you have on one hand, the Moose are the, you know, in our minds, the preeminent AHL franchise. I mean, from top to bottom, they're really run like an NHL organization. But at the same time, you have all the hockey fans in Winnipeg clamoring to get back into the NHL. Can you sort of talk about the balance and how those, how you sort of strive to keep the Moose front and center while knowing that really, you know, hockey fans are hoping for the NHL to return?
Well, I think that the movement or the clamor for the NHL, I mean, it kind of goes through its ebbs and flows in terms of dealing with the Moose. I think that the Moose as a franchise and a hockey product have grown a great deal of credibility over the last few years with a product that's been on the ice. I think the Calder Cup run a couple of years ago captured the city's imagination and kind of made the Manitoba Moose the talk of the town for a while, and I think that really helped in the organization's search for, I guess, credibility, as you might call it. But, it's something that's, again, something we can't control. What goes on the streets and what, goes on in the hearts and minds of the fans, we just work to make sure that we put the best product that we can on the ice, make it a great time for the fans when they do come to the arena and they do spend their money to come and watch the Moose. And it's the more you work at that, and it does take time. We realized that a long time ago. Some people in this organization have been here since day one 15 years ago, and they've been through a lot more of the trials and tribulations of that than I have. But since I came over here about 8 or 9 years ago, it's something that you just put your nose to the grindstone and hope that over time that people, fall in love or take to the product that you put on the ice. We've got a great managerial staff and coaching staff that work every day to make sure that they put the best AHL team on the ice and get the right players in here and work hard with our relationship with the Canucks in order to make sure that it works for both sides, because it is a partnership and it is an affiliation, and it is a bit of a challenge at times, but at the same time, as you're working on your day-to-day business, it's something that, I got asked a question a while ago, how much of your day is consumed with NHL talk? And to be very honest with you, when you're here at the office and working on your job, there's not a lot of it that goes into your mind about the NHL. It's basically you're working on the job that you're doing, which is the AHL, and making sure that you do the best job that you can.
Sure, and the fans in Winnipeg tonight will be able to see for themselves how classy of an organization the Moose are. It's Mike Keane, retirement jersey night at the MTS Center. Scott Brown, Director of Corporate Communications and Hockey Operations, thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Enjoy the special night tonight at the MTS Center.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
Let's head to break. When we come back, one final segment, rapid fire, cheers and jeers. You know it, you love it. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Thank you to all our guests that have joined us today on the program, starting with Gabe Desjardins of BehindTheNetHockey.com, George Johnson of the Calgary Herald, Damian Cristadero of the St. Petersburg Times, and most recently Scott Brown of True North Sports and Entertainment. In case you missed any of the program, it'll be available on iTunes. Just search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes, and you can subscribe to the program and download it at your convenience. And, of course, we still... I don't remember where I was going with that. My brain's gone blank.
Rapid fire.
Time for rapid fire this week. Let's start with in the KHL. That'd be our good friends at the Continental Hockey League. Denis Kuliash of Avangard Omsk of the KHL won the hardest shot competition during the KHL All-Star Skills Competition last week. His shot registered at 110.3 miles per hour, shattering the previous hardest shot of 105.9 miles per hour registered in the NHL All-Star Game 2 weeks ago. Do you believe in the legitimacy of Kuliash's reported number, or do you suspect some Russian funny business?
Russian funny business. That's a hard shot. I mean, 105.9 miles per hour by Chara was a ridiculously hard shot. He set a record.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, he's 6'9". I mean, I don't know how big this guy is, but if he's not, if he's just, you know, your average size hockey player, 6'1", 6'2", then that's impressive. I have to believe that it's a real clocking. I'm just surprised that, you know, the Russian League has an all-star game. It's a little bit surprising for skills competition, but that's impressive. 110 miles per hour. I forget what the guy's name was. Back in the day, there was a guy that was drafted by the Flames, and the only reason why he was drafted was because of his hard shot. Something like this could get him an NHL tryout just because he had a hard shot.
He played in the NHL before Denis Kuliash. Let me look it up quickly to see where... It was briefly. I mean, To me, it's Russian funny business. But Remus, what's your thoughts?
I'd want to check what kind of brand of radar gun they're using. I don't know how legitimate this is or what kind of, you know, consumer electronics they have over there.
But the game was taped on using beta cameras also.
I was also thinking maybe it was recorded in kilometers per hour because, you know, it's in Russia, and then there was some error in the conversion to miles per hour.
He was drafted 243rd overall in 2004 by the Nashville Predators.
Has he played at all or no?
I don't believe. There's no evidence that he's played in the NHL at all, but I could potentially be missing out on that. But, you know, it just seems to me that this is the KHL... you know, making up a number in order to get some publicity that, well, they're getting from us right now.
You never know, though. I mean, like, you know, Chara, he almost hits 106, right? This is 110. It's not like he's hitting 120. So maybe he just is a natural freak and has a shot that hard. I've never seen the guy play, so I have no idea. But he could just have a really good shot.
He never played in the NHL, for the record. But anyways, kudos. That'll probably be the first and last time Denis Kuliash gets mentioned on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Moving on. On Wednesday night, the Bruins and Canadiens engaged in an old-school 1970s-style matchup. 14 goals, 182 penalty minutes, and a goalie fight between Carey Price and Tim Thomas. After the game, both Thomas and Price admitted that their hearts weren't into it when they squared off. Do you think they will lose some respect in the dressing room by admitting they were more or less play-fighting when their other teammates were legitimately out for blood in their fights?
Not at all. I don't think they lose any legitimacy. I think the whole thing with this is, first of all, if you tuned into that game, you would think you were watching WWE Royal Rumble if you turned into that game or last night's Islanders-Penguins game. But I think Thomas and Price were around. They were skating around, and I don't think they're going to lose any legitimacy or respect in the dressing room. If anything, you know, that fight was just a little bit pointless. But... you know, Tim Thomas, it was clear that he just wanted to take Price down, and that's why he kind of half-horse-collared him down.
Yeah, no, Price took Thomas down,
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did. Price took Thomas down, and then he could have pounded on him, and he just let him go.
No.
And they were laughing about it.
No, that's not what happened.
Absolutely 100%.
Thomas pulled Price down.
Wrong. Yeah. Wrong.
What fight were you
wrong.
Watching?
I don't
what
know.
What fight were you watching?
You were wrong.
Price is the bigger guy, and Thomas pulled him down.
Absolutely 100%
pull
wrong.
It up right now. I want to watch it beside you and tell me who pulled who down.
Okay. I'll
have you even watched the fight, Drew?
Remus, your thoughts on it? I'll pull it up so that we can prove as a wrong here.
No, but... I mean, Thomas skated towards Price, and Price started to get into his position, and then Thomas pulled him down because they weren't interested. They were laughing. It was a joke for them.
You know what, guys? I would say the first thing the players will say is that they don't want their goalies to fight. They don't want their goalies to get injured. You know, the Bruins and the Canadiens, they're going to rely on these goalies. They need them throughout the playoffs. But the one thing about, you know, goalie fights is if everyone on the ice is fighting and the two goalies are, you know, are just standing at opposite ends looking at each other, I think there's some pressure on them to maybe come together and try to make something happen for the, you know, only for the reason just to, for entertainment purposes.
But even though they were play fighting, at least they were, I mean, this is, I love this. Goalies could fight every game and I would be happy with it because I love fighting in hockey. But even if they're play fighting, I think that their teammates just respect them for at least, you know, having a good time, getting something going. I don't think that anybody on the Bruins or the Habs was thinking, oh, I wish Thomas clocked Price. That's not what it's about. I mean, when you're fighting, there were already, you know, eight guys fighting. I think the teammates would actually respect them just for, you know, getting in there. You know what I mean? Like, not kind of, there have been goalies in the past who kind of sit back and they watch everyone else fight. At least these guys were, you know, threw the gloves off. They were tugging on each other's jerseys. They were smiling a little bit. Drew's going over the video.
The video's
right
coming
now.
Up, so we'll get.
But Joe, Thomas skates up to Price, and they both were barely even in a position to fight. And Thomas first pulls him down, and then Price kind of went above him. But I mean, both of them didn't want to actually throw punches to the face.
Not disputing that, but what we are arguing about is the fact that it was definitely Price who took Thomas down.
No, it was Thomas that pulled Price down.
Okay, well the video is up here, so we will... Let's get to the next rapid fire.
You're not even at the fight. You're watching, like, highlights of Brad Marchand's goal right now.
I'm watching the game highlights so that we can see the fight. I don't know when the fight exactly happened during the broadcast.
Next topic.
Thank you, Remus. Andrew Ferentz of the Boston Bruins came under some fire for saying publicly that he didn't like the hit that Daniel Paille delivered, resulting in Paille being suspended. Yeah. The fact he made his comments in public and not in private have caused controversy. What do you think of Ferentz publicly calling out his teammate? Remus, we'll start with you.
You know, I think it's a tough situation. You know, there's a big big problem now with hits to the head. And Andrew Ferentz, you know, didn't like what he saw. Maybe he shouldn't have said it in public. But, you know, that's just the way it is. You got to, you know, police the game here and be careful of this kind of stuff. You know, he's looking out for other guys. And you know what? No, I don't think he should have called him out.
Okay. Ezzy, your thoughts?
Michael, I don't know whether or not Andrew Ferentz should have called him out. He obviously did, so I'm going to react to that. But I have no problem with it, but it seems like it was a little self-serving to get his voice out there. That's something that he didn't need to say to the media. It's something that he could have said, you know. Andrew Ferentz could have mentioned that to his teammates, you know, when the microphones weren't rolling.
Yeah.
There's no need to make that public. I mean, that just...
I think he's known as being a bit of a locker room politician, so I think that's part of the problem. Here's the clip. We have it up right now of Price and Thomas.
Okay,
and
so they're fighting. Thomas went to pull Price down.
Whatever, he didn't pull down.
Who did I say pulled who down?
You said that Thomas pulled Price down.
He tried to pull him down.
Great.
Failed.
Yeah, well, so you failed in your attempt to try and get and be correct. It's exactly the same thing.
There's no, we're both wrong, if anything.
Absolutely not. I'm 100% correct.
Hold on, you said Price pulled him down. He didn't pull him down.
Okay, let me go back. And so, there he goes. Look, okay, so look, Thomas is on the ground, and Price is on top of him.
But Thomas went to, you know what?
Okay, this next, you're so wrong, it's actually painful right now.
Jonas went to drag him out.
Jonas Gustafsson recently left in the middle of a Toronto Marlies game due to an elevated heart rate. Yesterday, he underwent a heart ablation procedure. His heart problems have been well documented since he came to Toronto. Are we getting close to the point where Gustafsson's heart problems will result in his career being shortened?
Hopefully not. That would be unfortunate. He's not an old guy at all, but... I don't know enough about this to make any comments, but this is something that he brought before he came to Toronto, Drew. He had a heart problem before he came to Toronto. So, you know, he's done with the Leafs for this season. He's basically conditioning in the AHL, but let's hope that he's not injured let's hope that this heart problem isn't something that's going to give him long-term injury problems.
Last one on rapid fire. Sorry, Rim, we'll script you on this when we're right up against the clock. Last week, we discussed the teams with the best local TV ratings. This week, it's going to be the worst. To no one's surprise, the list of the teams with the lowest local ratings are populated with non-traditional hockey markets. Florida comes in last with an average of 3,000 homes in the Miami region tuning into Panthers games. Atlanta is in second last. What sort of impact will these terrible ratings have on the NHL's negotiations of a new national TV deal? Remus.
You know, I don't think it's going to have any impact at all. When you watch all the, you know, U.S. national games on NBC, when was the last time they showed Florida, Phoenix, Atlanta. If no one's going to watch it, they're just not going to show the games, and they'll show the games of the teams, you know, the New York, the Pittsburgh, the Philadelphia, you know, the teams that do get viewers.
So you don't you think that when they negotiate the contract, the sort of the southern U.S. states are just going to be pretty much ignored?
You know, the value, you know, maybe they may not get as much value because, you know, they can't market as many teams, but, you know, if they want to get ratings, they just won't show the teams then.
Yeah, I agree with you. 100%. It doesn't matter. The NBC and Versus have done a great job, and the NHL is going to get a good TV deal coming up regardless of their bottom ratings.
Cheers and jeers.
Ezzy, we'll start with you. Cheers and jeers.
Okay. I was going to cheer Jacques Lemaire for his 600th win, and I will. But I'm going to cheer Mike Keane, three-time cup winner. One of the greatest players to ever come out of the city, so congratulations to Mike for being the first guy to have his number retired at the MTS Center.
Very well done. Remus.
All right, well, I'll do my New Jersey Devils here. I'm going to cheer them for the recent hot streak, and I'm going to cheer Kovalchuk, my boy. He's stepping up in the last few games, and now he's scored two winners in the last two games. Good for him.
But you say your boys. I mean, you drafted him in a fantasy draft somewhere along the lines?
Yeah, he was really disappointing me, and now he's carrying us back to first place. As I think we're fighting in that league for one of the top spots.
Yeah.
And actually, after the show, you guys are just going to be fighting each other in a UFC battle taking place in a local park. That'll be interesting to watch. I'll wrap up cheers and jeers this week. We spoke about it in the On the Beat segment. I'm going to jeer the coverage of that PK Subban-Hal Gill interaction. I thought it was bunk. I thought it was poor journalism, and I thought the only purpose of it was to show PK Subban in a negative light and stop fabricating stories. I just don't think there's a place for fabrication of that kind in legitimate media. That's it, boys. That's it for this Saturday morning. I'd like to wish our thank yous to the following guests: Gabe DeShenna of BehindTheHockey.com, George Johnson of the Calgary Herald, Damian Cristadero of the St. Petersburg Times, Scott Brown of True North Sports and Entertainment. In case you missed any of this program, it'll be available on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to our operator extraordinaire, Raccoon Carnage, for joining us this Saturday morning in studio. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. Stay tuned to Sports Radio 1290 for the best in sports programming. And until next Saturday morning, we wish you good night and good luck.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk Saturday morning at 9, exclusively on Sports Radio 1290.